This is the Quality News Network. From Washington, new details are emerging about the death of Iraq's top terrorist, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. The U.S. military now says that he was reportedly still alive briefly when troops entered the safe house after the massive U.S. airstrike. U.S. troops conducted at least 17 raids in the aftermath. Based on information collected, 24 terrorist suspects were captured. In Baghdad today, the Prime Minister put a daytime driving ban in place. The vehicle ban is an effort to increase security in the wake of al-Zarqawi's death. Fearing al-Qaeda insurgents may seek to avenge the killing of their leader. At Camp David today, President Bush stated that he will not set a timeline for when U.S. troops may leave Iraq. Mr. Bush will meet with his national security and military advisors, along with their Iraqi counterparts, by teleconference for talks on Monday and Tuesday. On Capitol Hill, congressional negotiators have finished work on the $94.5 billion funding bill, the majority of which will pay for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. In addition, the Gulf states will get nearly $20 billion to rebuild after last year's hurricanes. In Washington, in a 2-to-1 ruling about rules that make it easier for the police and FBI to wiretap internet phone calls, a federal appeals court has sided with the Bush administration. Today's decision backed the FCC ruling that said internet service providers have similar obligations to telephone companies. In Gaza today, Palestinian officials say that Israeli artillery shells fired from a Navy gunboat hit a family picnicking on a beach. 7 people were reportedly killed. Israeli Defense Forces are investigating the incident and issued an apology. As a result, Hamas has called off a truce with Israel. It had been declared in 2005. In Washington, the State Department announced that the U.S. will convene an international meeting to discuss the future of Somalia. Earlier this week, after renewed heavy fighting, Islamic militia captured the capital of Mogadishu and ousted U.S.-backed warlords. In Berlin, the Western powers are giving Iran weeks, not months, to respond to their package of incentives aimed at convincing Iran to halt its uranium enrichment program. In Texas, the governor has a $5 million plan to install cameras on the border. You're listening to QNN.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
After 2 months of declines, the U.S. trade deficit rose in April. The Commerce Department reports it stands at $63.4 billion. It was pushed higher by surging oil prices and a flood of imported items from China. Upscale clothing maker Polo Ralph Lauren has announced it will eliminate fur from all of its apparel and home collections. They are the first major designer house since the mid-1990s to abandon fur. JetBlue Airways is introducing a new shuttle service between Washington, D.C. and New York. The introductory fares start at $39 each way. Consumer Reports has recommendations for the best cars for teenage drivers. They include the Honda Civic, Ford Focus, and Mazda 3. The cars were chosen because they are, quote, engaging, quick, and enjoyable to drive. There may soon be more competition in cable TV markets. The House passed legislation Thursday to make it easier for telephone companies to enter the subscription television market. In the Netherlands, Europe's first detox clinic for video game addicts will open. The director says video games can be just as addictive as gambling or drugs. Light sweet crude settled at $71.63 a barrel today. And at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow Jones lost more than 360 points. The Dow was down 47 points and the Nasdaq was down 10 points. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I am Bob Kincaid. It's Friday here in the last little toe hills of the Appalachians in the northwest corner of Alabama, to which I will bid farewell early tomorrow morning, returning home to the undisclosed secure location where at sits our fabulous studio. But that means that I'll be back to finally give Agnes a break. You know, what's that old story Jerry Clower used to tell? The two fellers out hunting in the woods, raccoon hunting, thought they had one treed. One fella started climbing a tree and got up there, and terrible ruckus was made, and was just squalling. Obviously, it wasn't a raccoon. Some sort of a cat. And the fella kept hollering down, "Knock him out, John! Knock him out, John!" John hollers, to our special remote broadcasts on Monday, starting at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, live from the Take Back America conference at the Washington Hilton in Washington, D.C., oddly enough. 3 to 5, that'll be our good friend Guy James, followed from 5 to 8. Little programming wrinkle there. 5 to 8 will be our good friend Bruce Birch as he launches a foray into weekday programming. I'll pick up the torch at 8 p.m., and we'll go from there. Sound good? Sounds good. And I imagine it'll be quite exciting, because everybody who's anybody, well, you know what I mean, will be at that conference. Russ Feingold's going to be there. John Conyers is going to be there. One of my favorite bloggers, David Sirota, is going to be there. All kinds of, well, you know, Hillary's going to be there. Barack Obama is going to be there. All kinds of folks. And like I said, we will be live from Washington, D.C. from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. So please join us for that. Wake the friends and neighbors, tell them too. All right. So where do we start tonight? I got to admit, I'm a little tired. You ever shut down a house? You know, like when you're going away from it for a good long time. I did that. I'm doing that today. And you know what? It's amazing the stuff you have to pay attention to. Mercy, there's a lot of stuff. Make sure all the every last little dish, all the garbage is emptied, and the bedclothes are washed and changed, and all, you know, had to put check the locks, make sure everything's locked up. So, you know, that's where I've been today. Although going back and forth through the house, I catch a little bit of mainstream media here and there. Let's do a little historical something or another. my good friend Eugene sent this to me. Humorous guy, Eugene. With the death of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, Ann Coulter is really having trouble finding compatible men. Of course, there's still Charles Manson, but he might be too old for her. Nero's unavailable. This is the anniversary of his death in AD 68. He was the last of the Caesars. Kicking to death a pregnant wife is not good for a dynasty. His uncle Caligula had merely thought himself a god. Nero was less modest and insisted on a career in show business. The entire empire was a captive audience to this aspiring Homer. Now, do we mean the ancient Greek Homer, or are we foreshadowing Homer Simpson? I don't know. In fact, he did put on a good and free show with lavish spectacles that the audience enjoyed. Nero may have terrorized the patrician class and some obscure Jewish sect, but the public generally liked him. Nero was succeeded by Galba, a man everyone respected but no one really liked. The cheap and charmless bureaucrat quickly inspired a wave of nostalgia for Nero. A playboy patrician named Otho exploited this popularity as well as the Praetorian Guard's susceptibility to bribes. In less than a year, Galba was dead and Otho was emperor, but not for long. Otho was overthrown by Vitellius, who then was defeated and killed by Vespasian. And that was all in 1 year, AD 69. Vespasian reigned 10 years and had the originality to die of natural causes. His attempt to ingratiate himself with the Roman populace is still standing. It is, in fact, the Colosseum. And I was digging through some ancient, you know, I love my ancient history. And it is said that Nero's last words were rumored to be, "But I really want to direct." No, but in that there's a kernel of something interesting, and that is because I heard this myself as a teenager touring Rome. We got to the Colosseum, technically I guess you would call it the Flavian Amphitheater. But we got to the Colosseum and some religion industry type was there and he said, "Oh, you must remember. Oh, this is the place where brothers and sisters, so many of our Christian forebears were tortured and killed and died for our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ." Of course, he was an idiot. But, I mean, that's the kind of disinformation and the kind of gobbledygook that comes down even through the ages. This is where they fed them to the lions. This is where the Christians were persecuted, yea, verily, even as they are persecuted, you and I, today, for our very beliefs. Ouch. Because, of course, none of that ever happened in the Flavian Amphitheater. The persecutions were mostly under Nero. And they didn't call themselves Christians. They called themselves followers of the way. But never mind. There's plenty of news out there today. But I can't resist a little historical overthrow, over and back. Can't resist. Now, there a couple of things. I want to, I do firmly believe in giving credit where credit is due. And patting people on the back when they do the right thing, because I think you do when, you know, you catch more flies with honey than with vinegar. So that being the case, kudos really are in order for the Senate Democrats. Oh, they they don't do much, but once in a while they do something, and they did something yesterday that is certainly worth our mention. Yeah, our mention, me and that mouse in my pocket. They stopped the estate tax foolishness. They stopped the elimination of the Paris Hilton tax. Now, of course, the Republicans, being liars, had said, you know, this will destroy family farms. And even hoodooed some otherwise decent Democrats in the House of Representatives into going along with them, like my congressman, whose spokesman said that very same thing to me over a year ago. Well, you know, we did to protect the family farms. Huh? What? But it got stopped, and it's dead. It's buried. It's gone. But then again, we thought drilling in the Anwar was dead and buried and gone back when, what was his name, Senator Cranky from, oh yeah, Stevens from Alaska. I don't know if I'm, my friends, I do not know if I will come back to this august body. I am disgusted with you all. He did everything but say that you won't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore. And now drilling in the Anwar is back. So just remember that as long as these miserable SOBs still hold power in Washington, D.C. at all, they will try to do as much evil as they possibly can before we can get rid of them. And so I applaud the Senate Democrats for stopping this Paris Hilton tax nonsense in its tracks. But we all know that whenever Republicans are in power, continued vigilance is the watchword of the day. Ever vigilant they must be. Because the next thing you know, we'll have a war appropriations bill, and they'll sneak drilling in the Anwar and repealing the Paris Hilton tax into the back end of it. They're good at tacking things onto the back ends. Well, they're Republicans. So all of that is out there, and ever so much more. It's Friday, so I thought we might clean up a few things that we didn't get to during the rest of the week. Whatever you want to bring to the table, well, that's more welcome than anything else. And our standing promise to you remains, we will make every effort to bring first-time callers to the front of the line. Yeah, we'd give you a toaster, but we don't have any. And we will also make every effort to make sure that you don't sit on hold forever and a day. Because this is conversation radio, and it's hard to have a one-sided one. So all of that is out there. You know the phone number, 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is the Head On Radio Network.
Void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
If we do not take responsibility for saving animals from extinction, we allow a part of ourselves to die with them, because in the web of life,
and if I pass,
we are all connected.
Again, you can rest assured.
Help World Wildlife Fund protect animals and the places where they live by ordering a free action kit. Together, we can leave our children a living planet.
She said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
What do nurses, teachers, and moms all have in common?
We help kids grow,
learn, and thrive.
And they are all being targeted by Governor Schwarzenegger in this year's budget. Governor Schwarzenegger used to be known as an action hero. But what kind of hero targets moms and families to bear the brunt of budget cuts? In fact, the governor is choosing corporations over California's hardworking mothers. 70% of California's corporations pay no taxes at all, while the single biggest budget cut this year is to programs that benefit hardworking moms and their families, like child care, CalWORKs, and Medi-Cal. Governor Schwarzenegger, did you know that 92% of nurses and 76% of teachers are women? Stop targeting California's moms and kids. For more information, please call the California Partnership at 562-862-2070. Brought to you by the California Partnership. On the web at california-partnership.org.
Think you have driving skills?
challenge at drivingskillsforlife.com. Earn rewards like free music downloads. Driving Skills for Life.
This is Lee Hamilton
and Ron Saracen of the U.S. Capitol Historical Society.
Our Capitol has hosted some of the great debates of our history,
and we're both proud to have served here.
But there is no guarantee that representative democracy will simply continue on.
We all need to ask ourselves whether we're doing our part as citizens,
staying informed, engaging elected officials, and being active in our communities.
It's our history,
and it's also our future.
Get involved.
There's a new mix. Very nice. Very nice, dear. Well done. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. And, you know, I started out last night with the whole thing about Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. And I said that the information that we had at that point in time was dummied up, ginned up, faked up. And I get up this morning and what do I find out? That the information we had about the hit, that's right, we call them hits now. The information we had about the hit on Abu Musab Zarqawi was, in fact, ginned up, dummied up, faked up, frauded up, and generally not true. Oh, we killed him by dropping we dropped a house on his head. It was a tornado did it. And it was a lie. I mean, yeah, they did drop 2 500-pound bombs on a mud hut. Sure. But we found, you know, that they ran right at, oh, yeah, we killed him, you know, had little, you know, an entire corps of little hired U.S. Army munchkins saying, ding dong, Abu's dead, Abu's dead, Abu's dead. Oh, we killed him with the bomb. I dropped it right on his head. Had to clean his head up. Nope. Sorry. Oops, we lied. You know what? One of these days, they're going to come out and... No, they're not. They're not going to come out and say we lied. We had bad information. We were given bad information. We had misinformation. We were misinformed. Yeah, that's... Yeah, we were misinformed, sure. Nah, it's Creighton's for you. Nope, he was a little the worse for wear after the 2 500-pound bombs dropped on him. But he was alive. Not as alive as you and me. We don't know. We got it, you know, the brass, the top brass, the generals, the colonels, the majors, the captains, liars. They won't tell the truth. And it turns out there was even more skullduggery at work because, all right, I don't remember the guy's name. I just remember hearing it. Dear leader, loose lips sink ships, and, you know, his, I guess, was loose today. Because he said that he placed a call to General to congratulate him on the operation. Now, we had been led to believe that this was strictly an aviation bombing run, right? I mean, this was 2 500-pound bombs. This wasn't a Hellfire missile from a CIA-operated unmanned aerial vehicle, right? I mean, am I getting it so far? Well, it turns out, you know, Dear leader says that he placed a call to General and congratulated him on a successful mission. Well, there's no big deal about that except for the fact that General is, you know, and I love the way they presented it on CNN. There are very few photographs of General because he's one of the most secret generals we have. He's in charge of special forces. Bum ba dum da dum dum dum. So it turns out it was a special forces operation. And yet it was done with 2 500-pound bombs. And yesterday it was, oh, yeah, we got him with the bombs. And by this morning it was, well, you know, he was coughing up blood when we got there. Because what happened, the Iraqis got, you know, the Iraqi military, the police or whatever, the Keystone Cops, you know, Baghdad's finest, Bakuba's finest, whatever, got there. And they started telling people, oh, yeah, he was alive. And so now it turns into this old West thing. You know, I love the way things sort of connect through the weeks and through the days. Well, what was it? Two or three days ago, Dear Leader went down to Laredo, and I had the thing running through my head, that old cowboy song, The Streets of Laredo. For I have done wrong and know I must die. And the next thing you know, I get up this morning, and basically you're getting the Streets of Laredo account of the death of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, who tried to say something, but no one could make it out what he was saying in Arabic. Sergeant, what's he saying there? I don't know. Sounds like some kind of un-American gobbledygook to me. Probably speaking Haji. No one could understand the last words of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. Did they have a translator there? And then he turned away and he expired. And the questions, you know, did you have to clean him up, General? Oh, yeah, we had to. He was a mess. Yeah, he had lacerations to his neck, his torso, and his cuticles were badly severed. I mean, is it just me? Am I wearing? I mean, have I gone all Star Trek and I'm wearing Commander Scott's transparent aluminum hats? Because I don't believe a word of this. I mean, I don't care whether the dude's alive or dead. Frankly, it doesn't matter whether he's alive or dead. It's the same thing with Osama. Remember, we were told it didn't matter if Osama was alive or dead. 6 feet, 6 inches tall, portable dialysis unit wandering around in mountains. Can't, nope, not, nope, that guy, nah, I haven't seen him. The war in Iraq's turned into a Warner Brothers cartoon. Open up in there, rabbit. We know you're hiding, Muggsy. Yeah, I ain't hiding, Muggsy. If I was hiding, Muggsy, in this oven over here, would I turn the gas on? Yeah, you might, Rabbit, you might. Well, if I was hiding my buddy Muggsy in this oven with the gas on, would I light a match and throw it in? Boom! All right, Rabbit, you've convinced me. We'll look for Muggsy in the city. That's what this is. The Pentagon, our military, has been reduced by virtue of a moron. To acting out bits from old 7-minute Warner Brothers shorts and 20-year-old fantasy movies like The Princess Bride. Ah, we dropped the bomb and he said, well, you know. And Monty Python bits, is he dead? I was coughing up blood last night. Jiminy. So I don't know what we get tomorrow. I mean, tomorrow do I move on to the line from Casablanca where the Nazi colonel says, we have not yet decided whether or not he committed suicide or was shot trying to escape. Or is it just me? I don't know. Look, time for the bottom of the hour break. Your thoughts are welcome. If I'm just losing it, and you know, there's something believable in any of this Zarqawi foolishness, please let me know. The part that's believable, I want to know about. Is it the part about him being dead? Is it the part about the bombing? Is it the part about, you know, what the hell is Arabic for rosebud? But that's me, I guess. Listen, ring it up. Your last chance for head on before the weekend starts. Of course, that doesn't mean it's your last chance in general. Wonderful programming coming your way Saturday night. Cup of Joe with our good friend Joe Vecchio, followed by Fourth Estate Radio. All of it begins at 8 o'clock Eastern. For right now, though, you got me. And I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Anne Braden.
You know, I got interested in Anne's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Coming Monday and Tuesday, the Head On Radio Network will be broadcasting live from the Taking Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. Join Bruce Birch and Guy James from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. on location in the nation's capital. That's right, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Kiss me riding dirty, trying to kiss me riding dirty, trying to kiss me riding dirty.
Welcome back to this Friday evening edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And for those of you who enjoy your internet, and that would be everybody listening to this program, rather a disturbing little piece of journalism coming out of CNET News, CNETnews.com. Dylan McCullough wrote it, House Rejects Net Neutrality Rules. And, you know, look, I'm about as good at internetting as I am at mathematicizing. But I do know that the internet is in danger. And it got a little bit more jeopardized today. Straight out of the story by Dylan McCullough, the U.S. House of Representatives definitively rejected the concept of net neutrality Thursday, dealing a bitter blow to internet companies like Amazon, eBay, yada, yada, yada. Screw them. It's you we're worried about. It's me I'm worried about. The vote was 269 to 152. Largely, it was along party lines. If anybody wants to look it up and let me know who the mugwump Democrats were in that vote, or if there were any partially patriotic Republicans, I'd love to know. The House Republican leadership ginned up enough votes to turn back a Democratic-backed amendment that would have enshrined net neutrality regulations into federal law. In essence, preventing the AT&T's and Verizon's and Bell South's and Comcast and Charter's and, Time Warner, the whole crowd that thinks they own the internets now. It would have kept them from ghettoizing the internet. Internets, I'm sorry. My apologies, dear leader. Fred, don't take it, there was a full day of debate. Ed Markey, congressman from Massachusetts, was the sponsor and the progenitor of the net neutrality amendment. He said, the future Sergey Brin's, the future Mark Andreessen's of Netscape and Google are going to have to pay taxes to broadband providers. He said the vote will change the internet for the rest of eternity. And what was at stake was something called the Communications Opportunity Promotion and Enhancement Act. Oh, look, it spells COPE. Oh, the Republicans can't do anything that doesn't spell something. Sure, I'm surprised they didn't call it the Internet Freedom Act. Clear skies, healthy forests, internet freedom. And I'm sure if my email is any indication, everyone is pretty well savvy on the net neutrality issue. The idea that Verizon, broadband is broadband, right? Wrong. Because some CEO at Verizon or Bell South or AT&T or Comcast or Charter, I'm not going to go through the whole litany every time I mention these thugs. Some CEO there, as it seems to be the case with most CEOs, has not figured out that they don't hook U-Hauls to hearses. And I guess do CEOs live in mortal fear of stockholders? Is that what it is? Jesus, if we don't give them another penny on the dividend, they'll sue! Is that what America is now? Every single last little middling opportunity to scrounge and scrape and squeeze another penny? No matter the cost to the body politic, no matter the cost to the public good, is fair game. Is that what it is? I mean, the Head On Radio Network operates literally, and I hate cliches, but this really isn't a cliche. The Head On Radio Network operates on the cutting edge. Sometimes we get cut. Of communications technology on the internet. Now, what are we going to do if it turns out that we start getting nice and successful because we're sending you, we're sending out a live audio stream that for the most part is pretty daggum reliable because we've got a handful of really, really dedicated professionals behind us. I do the credits every night at the end of the show. When we talk about something like this, it is more than appropriate to mention the folks who have made all this go, and that is primarily our chief engineer, John Fox in Australia, and Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers in Tallahassee, Florida. They bust their rear ends to make this work and make it happen and make it go. Am I to understand that now, and I think I do understand this correctly, that if the thugs at the giant telecoms and cable companies get their way, that they can decide that since we're sending out a stream to dozens of people, that they can charge us more? Is that what it is, isn't it? And if you don't want to, okay, so they're not net neutral, so maybe the CEO of one of these creepy companies is a Republican. Duh. And he decides that they send their signal over our pipe, that horn does. Harumph. We can't have that liberal rubbish out there. Harumph! I didn't get a harumph. Give me another harumph! And the next thing you know, we get a bill that says, you've got specialized content and, if you want to use that much bandwidth to send your program out, it's going to cost you an extra $2,000 a month. Am I being unreasonable? Am I being outrageous? Am I overreacting? Or could it be? Paranoia moment. Could it be that the groundswell of populism, and I will include in this groundswell of populism even right-wing freaks, because they're out there putting their freakishness out for to be either accepted or rejected within the broad avenue leading to the marketplace of ideas, as are normal people like us. Like we? Like us. Could it be that that has become frightening to the powers that be? I mean, you know from the very get-go when the idea, the internets were developed as a function of the Defense Department, weren't they? And making them sort of public and accessible to all Americans. Al Gore really did have something to do with that, didn't he? You get where I'm going with this, I trust. The internet is the living, breathing embodiment of the First Amendment. I can say booger, and the FCC can't do a damn thing about it. I could say all kinds of words. I could say dirty words in a foreign language. Government can't do anything about it. There are very, very few, things that cannot be said or done in print or visual or audio, video on the internet. Let the big telecoms ghettoize it in a way, as a way of killing it. Because of a story I saw a couple of days ago about the FBI coming down on internet service providers. Did you run across this one? This was disturbing in the extreme. The FBI, this is a Reuters story, the FBI wants U.S. internet providers to retain web address records for up to 2 years to aid investigations into terrorism and pornography. That was yesterday. It was a request that was made during a May 26th meeting between, Alberto Gonzalez and FBI Director Robert Mueller, with top executives at Google, Microsoft, and Time Warner's AOL. Now, if you believe that they want those records retained for 2 years to stop terrorism and pornography, well, how in the world you found the Head On Radio Network is beyond me, sunshine. Because, you see, they already have all the internet web addresses. They know every phone call you've made. If they're monitoring every phone call you've made, sweetie, they're monitoring your web traffic, too. Oh, we're only trying to establish patterns, you know, like that genius did in A Beautiful Mind. When one industry executive questioned how long the government wanted the records kept, Mueller said for 2 years and that the data would also be used for anti-terrorism purposes. Oh, that's when he came up with the anti-terrorism thing. My God. The internet sort of grew out there, came to life, blossomed. I mean, I don't know if at any time in human history since maybe the invention of the printing press and movable type, I don't know if there's been such a blossoming of thought at any time since then. And as with any undertaking like this, the people in power are terrified of it. Let's go to the phones. Jim is joining us. Jim, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling in. Are you there, Jim? Oh, okay. Well, sometimes it takes a minute. We have to hook up the tomato can to the string. You there, Jim?
I'm here.
There you are.
I just had to cut my speakers down.
I understand. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'll send you a bill. I have a new name. I'm the Cat Daddy.
That's not a new name.
I am the Cat Daddy. That's it. You got that?
Got it.
All right. You know, you talked about the history of the Internet. I remember back in 69 when it was called the ARPANET, and it linked DOD agencies and stuff like that. And then it subdivided into CISNET, BizNet, and finally got up to what it is today, you know. It's an incredible thing. And I can remember in 1980, term talking, being able to put people's computer from another site into monitor mode and all kinds of stuff. So this stuff has been around a long time, you know?
Well, in one form or another, yeah.
But they tried to say he did. He may have contributed to the information superhighway, but he certainly never said that.
No, he never said he invented it, but there was enabling legislation that he sponsored.
Yeah, I know it. I'll tell you something. But you were talking about some wild stuff on the Internet. And, you know, it's amazing why they haven't cracked down on it sooner. I mean, let's face it, there are some wild things out there.
Oh, yeah, lots of them.
And,
I mean, there's disgusting stuff out there. One quick cruise through Free Republic or Conservative Underground is enough to make you feel like you've got to be dipped by the heel in Lysol.
For real? I never tried this site.
You haven't?
No.
No, they're just a sick guy. Oh yeah, they're most. I mean, if you want to know about that last little 20% hardcore cancerous knot of people who still support George Bush, they live there.
Oh well, I thought that stuff is fun. I actually did see this though, a masturbate-a-thon from San Francisco. That was the wildest thing I have ever seen in my life. A friend of mine called me up and said, you just turn to this and look at this. You got your webcam and everything. And I swear to God, I said, if this is going on, anything goes.
You know, sometimes I think I must lead a sheltered life, Jim.
Oh, please. You don't fool me one bit, Kincaid.
I missed that one, by God.
Well, I mean, honestly and truly, when I saw that, and I just stared at it for about 5 minutes, and you know, and they were actually having this contest, and I said, just when the screen has reached the heights of its fulfillment, new wonders indeed appear.
Every day.
Every day. But I'll tell you something, nothing could be as vile and as filthy is some of the stuff that I hear locally on WWNR, your old flagship station, is from some of these people who get up there and try to tell the truth the way they see it. And, you know, honestly and truly, I would rather have the mind and eye of a fly than to have to look at the world the way these people must. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah. Well, you know, to be quite honest, Jim, I was thinking just the other day, I miss some of my friends that I used to get to talk to over in Beckley, who aren't necessarily computer listeners.
Be quiet. I'm in an undisclosed location.
Oh! I said, dang it! I said Beckley, or I said Burbank, Berkeley.
That's right, Bob. That's right. I'm right here on Telegraph Avenue in Berkeley, California.
That's right.
Right in front of the Ferrigetti bookstore. That's where I hang out anyway. But really, honestly and truly, some of these people, some of the stuff that they say, and they think that they're so clever. And I thought to myself, good Lord in heaven, if someone would just get that spirochete to my mind, a shot of penicillin, you'd be all done for, buddy. I mean, here's an example. Lion O'Brien was saying, you know, because the wildflowers estate along the roads of West Virginia, he thinks the school children ought to get out there and plant them. Now, could you imagine?
No, you're pulling my leg again.
You and Agnes getting your kids out of school and going on a field trip out there on I-77 with Malfunction Junction, with those whatever's rolling by at Warp 10, and as kids, the way they run out, you know how they do. I mean,
sure.
And it's the stupidest idea. I mean, where is this guy's mind? Well, I know what point of anatomy it's in.
Well, yeah, and you're assuming facts, not in evidence. You're assuming a mind.
Yeah. I did send him four pieces the other night.
Four?
Four. One was made out of solid onions.
No jalapeno pizza?
Mm-mm. I did give him a side order of breadsticks and marinara sauce and a case of Coke. I just want to be generous to the boy, that's all.
Absolutely. Now, next thing you know, you're going to be calling up and telling me you've asked him if he's got Prince Edward in a can.
No.
Prince Albert.
You could ask Union Wayne. I'm a little more sophisticated than that.
I've heard some of the sophistication, Jim.
Have you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, Bob, I'm a man who's slow to anger, but, I mean, you get my hackles up, well, you better head for Flak Tower number 3, because here comes the Stormovix.
Without a doubt, Jim.
I have not been doing anything crazy except doing housework and zipping up in cat boxes and stuff like that. But I just wanted, since it's Friday night, just let my tongue wag from both ends, and I'm sure I'll get a lot of flack from on your message board from that. And if they want that, that's just fine.
Well, you know, the other thing, Jim, you're getting a little bit of a following here, and I'm getting notes saying, will you please tell him to come to the chat room?
I'm scared to.
Oh, why? It's all friendly in there.
Bob, honestly and truly, you sent me the JavaScript, and
yeah.
I can't get it to open. I can sign up, but I can only get so far. I don't know what's wrong.
We'll make it go. We'll figure out a way to make it go because your following wants you in the chat room.
They do.
Oh yeah.
What following do I have?
Oh, it just depends. It depends from day to day, but you know, your calls are all your calls are always noted, and they always generate conversation.
That's what this is about: conversation radio. And all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. You know
exactly.
Yeah, I mean that's the way I look at it. And by the way, I kind of started laughing when they said the Cowie, that wasn't him. But listen, let me get a few facts straight from you, if I may. Did he not have a prosthesis?
See, that's, yeah. I mean, the whole thing was about how he'd gone to Jordan to have his leg lopped off and was, yeah.
Okay.
His buddies called him Stumpy.
Okay. And he had tattoos.
Apparently, and scars.
Yeah. And then he looks just like John Belushi asleep.
Yeah, for a guy who just had 1,000 pounds of munitions dropped on him, you know, not so bad.
Good. I mean, it may have blown his doors off, but it sure didn't hurt his head. They got his head combed out and everything, you know.
Oh, they said he had a terrible neck wound.
Really? Well, I understand there may have been a firefight outside. And those guys outside the compound or the safe house.
Well, I was rather interested to note dear leader's comment.
Yes, sir.
Whether or not, you know, whether it's just more paranoia on my part or not, I don't know. But that tells me that there was something more involved than a couple of 500-pound smart bombs.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they had his zeroed in. And apparently some of his own Jordanian tribesmen or countrymen may have been instrumental in his disclosure. Who knows? But
well, yeah,
you know,
and again, everybody's always looking to move up in the organization. So I wouldn't be surprised if somebody ratted him out.
But you know, I don't know where he shall find these 72 virgins. I don't know 72 virgins. I don't think I've ever known 72 virgins all my life.
Nah, it's 72 Virginians.
Huh?
It's a mistranslation. It's 72 Virginians.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I see. Okay. Well, listen, all my regards to, you know, all your friends out there, particularly Peter. He's always a lot of fun to listen to. And Dakota Bob. I haven't heard from him lately. Is he okay?
I believe so.
Well,
it's just been, a while.
I see what he has to say. My regards to him. And
okay.
I'm going to get off this phone like some fool and let you go and let you have your remainder of your program. And I appreciate your time you've given me.
And, always a pleasure, Jim. Thank you very much, and I wish you a very good weekend.
Well, you too. I just like to rant and ramble sometimes, but anyway.
Good for the soul.
Well, you know, now it's better. My meds will start kicking in. Take care.
Thanks, Jim. Have a wonderful night.
You too. Out of here.
Later. See how much fun this is? You can do this too. 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4, Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is the Head On Radio Network. News is next.
This is the Quality News Network. From Washington, new details are emerging about the death of Iraq's top terrorist, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. The U.S. military now says that he was reportedly still alive briefly when troops entered the safe house after the massive U.S. airstrike. U.S. troops conducted at least 17 raids in the aftermath. Based on information collected, 24 terrorist suspects were captured. In Baghdad today, the Prime Minister put a daytime driving ban in place. The vehicle ban is an effort to increase security in the wake of al-Zarqawi's death. Fearing al-Qaeda insurgents may seek to avenge the killing of their leader. At Camp David today, President Bush stated that he will not set a timeline for when U.S. troops may leave Iraq. Mr. Bush will meet with his national security and military advisors, along with their Iraqi counterparts, by teleconference for talks on Monday and Tuesday. On Capitol Hill, congressional negotiators have finished work on the $94.5 billion funding bill, the majority of which will pay for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. In addition, the Gulf states will get nearly $20 billion to rebuild after last year's hurricanes. In Washington, in a 2-1 ruling about rules that make it easier for the police and FBI to wiretap internet phone calls, a federal appeals court has sided with the Bush administration. Today's decision backed the FCC ruling that said internet service providers have similar obligations to telephone companies. In Gaza today, Palestinian officials say that Israeli artillery shells fired from a Navy gunboat hit a family picnicking on a beach. 7 people were reportedly killed. Israeli Defense Forces are investigating the incident and issued an apology. As a result, Hamas has called off a truce with Israel. It had been declared in 2005. In Washington, the State Department announced that the U.S. will convene an international meeting to discuss the future of Somalia. Earlier this week, after renewed heavy fighting, Islamic militia captured the capital of Mogadishu and ousted U.S.-backed warlords. In Berlin, the Western powers are giving Iran weeks, not months, to respond to their package of incentives aimed at convincing Iran to halt its uranium enrichment program. In Texas, the governor has a $5 million plan to install cameras on the border. You're listening to QNN.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
After 2 months of declines, the U.S. trade deficit rose in April. The Commerce Department reports it stands at $63.4 billion. It was pushed higher by surging oil prices and a flood of imported items from China. Upscale clothing maker Polo Ralph Lauren has announced it will eliminate fur from all of its apparel and home collections. They are the first major designer house since the mid-1990s to abandon fur. JetBlue Airways is introducing a new shuttle service between Washington, D.C. and New York. The introductory fares start at $39 each way. Consumer Reports has recommendations for the best cars for teenage drivers. They include the Honda Civic, Ford Focus, and Mazda 3. The cars were chosen because they are, quote, engaging, quick, and enjoyable to drive. There may soon be more competition in cable TV markets. The House passed legislation Thursday to make it easier for telephone companies to enter the subscription television market. In the Netherlands, Europe's first detox clinic for video game addicts will open. The director says video games can be just as addictive as gambling or drugs. Light sweet crude settled at $71.63 a barrel today. And at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow Jones lost more than 360 points. The Dow was down 47 points and the Nasdaq was down 10 points. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, you are. I am, in fact, Bob, and I think it's going to be a rollicking little Friday night. Hope you're having as much fun as I am. Waiting. Sorry about the noise there. Something's coming out of the printer. Something, well, you know, it's got to do with the Bush administration, so it's horrifying and it's scary and make sharp, nasty teeth. Let's go straight back to the phones. We're joined by Luke from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
Bob, I tell you what, it's a wonder to me. I tell you what, I was telling Agnes, I said, sometimes, you know, you turn on the TV and it's like, you keep flipping channels, it's like, is there got to be something on here that won't hurt? I mean, you know, maybe go to the cartoon channel or something, you know. It's like you go channel to channel. It's like I was watching over on CNN. It's like, well, they were sitting there just doing a kiss fest on Arnold. You know, it's like this reinvention of Arnold now. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, all those things he did the last couple of years, that's okay. You know how it is. We don't want to talk to him about
that. Yeah, it didn't happen.
No. You know, it is. We're just going to rewrite all that stuff.
Well, I mean, look what it's done to me, Luke. I mean, I'm a Warner Brothers cartoon fan, and now I can't watch a Warner Brothers cartoon without seeing the hand of Donald Rumsfeld in it.
I know. It's everything you see, your mind links it back to something else. And it's like, you know, I was hearing somebody else this evening. We were talking about She Whose Name We Will Not Mention,
yes.
Who's been on the air this week. I tell you what, I think I heard, maybe it was Al Franken this afternoon, it was like, he essentially took the oath, he said he will not appear on any show with her anymore. And I think everybody on the left side ought to just say that. We, you know, you're never on, you know, anybody wants to, that's fine, but don't expect anybody to come on opposing or anything. We ain't even gonna talk about her. You know, if someone walks into a studio and sees her, they ought to turn around and walk right back out.
Well, I tend to agree. Well, I don't know why. But you know she's only part of a list, Luke.
Oh, I know. But I mean,
why the hell, Glenn? Why is Glenn Beck? Why is Glenn Beck on the air? Why is Bingo Billy Bennett on the air?
Oh God, I saw that. Did you see the? It's probably over at Crooks and Liars. You ought to go take a look. He was on the Daily Show this week, and apparently Jon Stewart went right after him. I didn't get to see all
that.
Bits and pieces, but it's like okay.
I'll have to go over to Comedy Central's website and see if I can watch the whole thing. That would shoot. That watching John take on Bingo Billy would be that'd be worth money.
It was. It really was. I tell you what. But like I say, it's one of those things. I tell you what. Like you say, there's 20 or 30. You know, right now we can probably name off the top of our heads. But I think we got to start with her and anybody that's anybody. The minute you walk into a studio and see her, they ought to turn around and walk right back out. And somebody else says, "Why?" I said, "As long as she's here, I'm not." I mean, it's got to pay some kind of price, and I mean, there ain't anything else we can really do to her. You know what I mean? But I think
honest to God, I don't understand why she's the. I mean, I don't know. What's the attraction? Why is she the darling of the Republican Party?
She apparently was the only one of the. I guess it was the one of the blondes that survived. You know what I mean? You know, during the Clinton years, we had all the blondes from starting with Susan McMillan Carpenter and, you know, and all these others. You know what I mean? And, Barbara Olson, you know, she had a tragic problem, but, you know, ending. But you know what I mean? But I mean, there were five or ten of those. You know what I mean?
Laura Ingraham.
Oh, God. You know what I mean? That's like, say, every time you turn around there, one of them was. And it's like, she apparently is just the one who's outlasted the others.
Like some sick and twisted game of Survivor.
Okay, it's death match, but you know.
Yeah, but see, just putting her any program you put her on just immediately tells me that program has no credibility. But they're putting her on there because they think she's a ratings generator.
Well, you know, you see some of the articles, you know, where people have been talking about, you know, here's Today, who's been carrying O'Reilly for the last 6 months off and on. Now they stick her on. It's like you know, it's one of those things.
Well, Luke, the Today stuff is the warm up for the exit of Katie Couric.
Yeah,
because it is going to swing to the right. If it already hasn't.
Well, we'll see what happens when Meredith gets there because she is a liberal for the most part. So we'll see how that goes. But I know. They'll tone her down. You can't do anything overly liberal. You'll bias the show. It's like, God. Well, see, that's why you're carrying O'Reilly about every month on your show. It's like, okay. But one thing about, have you been seeing this thing where they keep talking about this, about the election out in California? But you know what? And I've seen two or three places on the liberal side where they mention it's like, isn't it amazing how no one is mentioning the fact that, oh, by the way, they still haven't counted the provisional ballots that out there in this thing to replace Cunningham, that apparently, you know, there was only like a 4,000 vote margin, and they still haven't even counted the provisional ballots. And Bob, are you still there?
I'm sure he is.
No, he's probably talking to us, but we just can't hear him.
That happens on occasion.
I know. But like I was telling him, I said, you know, it's amazing how no one's mentioning the fact I mean, if you go to like the San Diego Bee or something like that, you have to hunt to find anything on it. That no one will even mention the fact that, oh, by the way, there's all these provisional ballots that still have not been counted.
Oh, I know it.
And the people, and they were talking, I think it was on Randy's show, Randy Rhodes, they were talking about the fact that, you know, some of these people that they were talking to are saying, you know, we were working with Move On, and that's the thing they were telling them to do, was everybody to do provisional ballots because they weren't trusting the machines out there. And they, you know, said they were talking to somebody who'd been doing the phone-ins, and that, you know, they had people after person that they'd called had already done provisional balloting.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, when we went to vote here, they asked me, you know, do you want paper or do you want to do electronic? It's a no-brainer. I want to do paper.
Well, we have a problem down here in Knoxville is the fact that they're having a fight over the charter because, like, of our county commission, we got like 19 members and 15 are up for election. And unfortunately, they didn't read the charter when it got passed about a dozen years ago. And apparently, most of them are term limited.
Well, it's insane.
So they're fighting it. So at the ballot this time, if you wanted to vote for any of them, you had to use a paper ballot. So you know what I mean? It's just gotten interesting on that. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, you know, I always like paper better than I do plastic anyway.
Well, it's one of those things. It's always worked, and I mean, it's always nice to have something there you can look back on. It's like they say with electronics, all you have to do is find a kid that knows how to work an Xbox.
Well, pretty much. I mean, you know, the Diebold, all you have to do is take in a near corn.
That's
and,
I mean.
And you'll get what you want.
That's what I mean. just wait some kids on there sitting there playing, and they're probably counting up numbers.
Ring, ring.
Uh-huh.
NSA.
Yeah. But, you know, they had places like up in the Ohio election. They were talking this thing about the article Bobby Kennedy had where he was talking that, you know, they had places up there where the votes were 700% of the total people who could vote.
Well, yeah, and, Luke, I just saw something run across my email from Brad Friedman at BradBlog. And apparently, one of the things that's coming out of the vote counting, and I have no particular opinion about the qualities of Francine Busby, but it turns out that uncounted ballots reported by the registrar in that area of San Diego went down by 2,000, but the number of votes in the race has increased by 8,000.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like I say, I'm sorry, gang, these numbers do not add up. So.
No, they don't. And how can we expect them to? They're done on these criminal machines.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like they said in the Bobby Kennedy thing, you know, where he was talking about there was a county up there where, my golly, everybody voted. In fact, everybody apparently voted seven times.
Gahanna, Ohio.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they were talking about that, dude. You're just kind of just sitting there wondering, you know. It's like saying, well, you have 1,000 people. You have 1,000 people in the county, and you know there's 3,000 votes. It's like, folks.
Yeah, there was something on the order of 600 registered voters and 1,300 votes for George Bush.
Yeah.
I mean that speaks volumes. It truly does.
Well, you saw the other thing that the one that we got to follow. I tell you what, the story I was hearing today is this thing with Arlen Specter. I mean, you wonder how the man gets in and out of a room without a spine. I tell you, you know, this thing where apparently he's wanting to push some part of a bill where essentially anything they've done, anything the Bush administration has done, is now legal on this NSA wiretapping.
So he's
trying to push this thing through. I'm just wondering if Dick Cheney invited him to go hunting or something. Yeah, I mean, you got to wonder, because I mean, it's like, but like I say, he's one of the ones I think's worse, because he's the one. Oh yeah, I talk a good game, but the minute they get me behind the closed doors.
Yeah, and, well, you know, I guess Dick Cheney, you know, uses some of that fun Patrick Leahy language on him, and he folds his tent and runs away.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's like, you know, like if you say you're going to hold hearings, fine, hold hearings. You know, and just tell Dick Cheney, Mr. Cheney, you can go over there and you can do it to yourself, too. Thank you.
Well, yeah, but he wrote a letter.
Ah.
He wrote a letter. I mean, you know, it takes some real, real moral courage to write a letter to Dick Cheney.
I know, yeah. What's the old thing Robin Williams used to say? It's like a cop on Valium. He'll go, stop, blow the whistle, go, stop. You know? And if you don't do it, don't stop, I'll blow the whistle again and yell, stop.
That's about where we are.
So,
well, Luke, thanks so much. I appreciate you calling in. Hope you have a good weekend. Any special plans?
See ya.
All right. Take care. And I did that because we have a break in front of us that we need to go to. If you want to get in on the conversation, you are more than welcome to do so. 877-443-2366 is the number. 877-4-HEAD-ON. Easy, isn't it? Email rolls into bob@headonradio.com all the time. So, you know, how many different ways can we make it easy for you to participate in conversation radio, huh? Right. So we'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Wad Wally and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Coming Monday and Tuesday, the Head On Radio Network will be broadcasting live from the Taking Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. Join Bruce Birch and Guy James from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. on location in the nation's capital. That's right, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
That meets the eye.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Promo there for our good friend Guy James, who will be, of course, live from 3 to 5 at the Take Back America conference on Monday and Tuesday, as will our compatriot Bruce Birch following up from 5 to 8. I'll be giving up an hour of my program to let Bruce go for 3, because there's going to be some great conversation there, or at least we're hoping. But that promo for Guy mentions his recent conversation with Greg Palast. And there's an excellent excellent article from Greg out today called Unreported, the Zarqawi Invitation. You can go to gregpalast.com and read it. But it harkens back to the appointment of General Jay Garner to run the Coalition Provisional Authority. It starts, they got him, the big bad beheading berserker in Iraq. But something's gone unreported in all the glee over getting Zarqawi. Who invited him into Iraq in the first place? If you prefer your fairy tales unsoiled by facts, Greg writes, read no further. If you want the uncomfortable truth, begin with this. A phone call to Baghdad to Saddam's palace on the night of April 21st, 2003. It was Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld on a secure line from Washington to General Jay Garner. Now, it goes on to, General Garner spoke to Greg Palast. Now, for the wingnuts out there that hover around the periphery of the program and do their monkey things, that sort of tells you something. Palast, whether you like his style or not, I kind of do. Gets to the bottom of things. Basically, Donald Rumsfeld told General Garner, don't unpack, you're fired. Because Jay Garner went over there with notions of using as his historical precedent the rebuilding of Germany and the reestablishment of legitimate government in Japan under MacArthur. He went over there thinking that he was going to try to set up an Iraqi government, have some elections, and, you know, then start making plans to leave. What Garner told Greg Palast is, my preference was to put the Iraqis in charge as soon as we can and do it with some form of elections. But there was apparently a 101-page document that wasn't in the cards. And part and parcel of the 101-page plan was a detailed schedule for selling off, quote, all Iraq's state assets. In other words, everything that Iraq controlled governmentally. Because, you know, not everybody gives corporations free rein over the government and the people and the resources. Not everyone does that. Iraq hadn't done that. Iraq controlled Iraq's oil. There was a detailed schedule for selling off all of Iraq's state assets. And as Palast notes, that's just about everything in Iraq. And according to the plan, especially the oil and supporting industries. Operation Iraqi Liberation, OIL. But this wasn't about the oil. Now, if you hear any right wing radio, you hear it all the time. Well, you know, if this was about the oil, why am I paying $3 a gallon? Well, the reason you're paying $3 a gallon has... Garner told Palast, quote, you prevent epidemics, you start the food distribution program to prevent famine. It's their country, their oil. Insurgents and those who wanted to destabilize a new Iraq have used this as a means of saying, look, you're losing your country, you're losing your leadership, you're losing all of your resources to a bunch of wealthy people. A bunch of billionaires in the world want to take you over and make your life miserable. And we saw an increase in the bombing of oil facilities. Pipelines, of course, built on the premise that privatization of oil is coming. I'm a believer, Garner said, that you don't want to end the day with more enemies than you started with. Sure makes sense, doesn't it? So, you know, the point is well made by Greg Palast. Zarqawi was our creature. You know, in the midst of all the foo-fraw, and I've got another one of these stupid right-wing press releases. 17 support the troops. We got Zarqawi rallies are now planned. Hooey. You do remember, don't you? Sure you do. You do remember that it has been proven, verified, no questions about it, real. Go to the bank with it. That the Bush administration had an opportunity to kill Abu Musab al-Zarqawi way back before the insurgency started, before they started the war. And it was determined that they'd better not take him out, because that might take away some of the justification for invading in the first place. Sure you remember. Sure it makes you want to scream like it made me want to scream and makes me want to scream to this day. Sure, that means that, how many dead Americans now? How many dead mothers, sons, and daughters? How many maimed? How many wounded? How many 5 years down the road waking up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night? How many panic attacks? How many post-traumatic stress disorders? How many homeless? How many no longer able to function in their jobs? How many? How many? To get a man that we had an opportunity to take out before the war even started. But it would have been bad to do so because it would have taken away some of the motivation, some of the justification for the war. How many? So I'm sorry, I won't be attending any of those 17 rallies being promoted by the war industry and the right-wing freaks to celebrate the killing of a man that we created. Oh, look, it's another scene from another movie. It's the Batman Jack Nicholson thing. No, I made you. Well, you made me. Well, isn't that juvenile? Yeah. Some good script writers out there. And too many Republicans watching with too much time on their hands watching too many old movies. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Nail. Daylight come and we drop a deep bone. We say pay, yo. Kick your ass, then we gonna come home. George Bush say that revenge come.
Payback come and we drop the bomb.
Load them bombs till the morning come.
Airplane come and we drop the bomb.
Come, Mr. Taliban, turn over Bin Laden.
Colin Powell gonna bomb his home.
Come, Mr. Taliban, turn over Bin Laden.
Payback come and we drop the bomb. Lip one bomb, two bomb.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. George W. Bush talks a lot about freedoms. He talks about how the terrorists hate our freedoms and about how important it is for us to bring the same kind of freedom we have in the United States to as many countries as possible. And we'll do it even if we have to bomb you back into the Stone Age. You'll get your freedom whether you like it or not. Of course, George W. Bush's concept of freedom is very different from mine, at least in the sense of who gets to be free and who doesn't. In the world according to Bush, freedom means he and his pals get to do anything they want, and if anyone doesn't like it, tough. Why bother vetoing a law, for example, when all you have to do is sign it, then write a statement saying you'll ignore it? Since no one has seriously challenged this, the end result is that the law is what George W. Bush says it is. It's no surprise to me that Bush behaves this way. In fact, I'd be surprised if he acted differently. He gets away with it because the people with the power to stop him won't act, the activists have no power, and the rest of us are more interested in who wins American Idol. 230 years ago, Patrick Henry said, "Give me liberty or give me death." Now we have Senator Pat Roberts arguing that we have to give up our liberties in order to be safe. "We don't have any civil liberties if we're dead," he says. Ben Franklin said that people who give up their liberty for safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Smart boys, those founding fathers. Wish we had a few like them now. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show via streaming audio every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The Millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free. And it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
All right, 26 minutes before the hour. We're halfway, well, we're more than halfway done this evening. I'll be honest, I'm going to knock off at the end of the second hour, and I'm going to do so for a reason. To be quite honest, I have a very, very long drive ahead of me tomorrow, and like I said, if you've ever shut down a house, you know that there's a bunch of stuff to be done, and there will still be a little bit of daylight left in the sky by the time we get to the top of the hour, and as a result of that, I'm going to take advantage of that to do a few more things around outside the house before we take off. So if you've got something you want to get off your chest, be out from under your bonnet, burr out from under the saddle, you know the drill. Use the phone now, 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366, and we'll cuss and discuss, as they say down at the livery stable around here, around these parts. Now, that having been said, you know, Zarqawi. I'm all Zarqawied out. But, you know, I have a penchant for science and technology. Not any good at it, but I really admire it. And you know that the right-wing distortion industry has been in full blossom ever since and before Al Gore's movie An Inconvenient Truth debuted. And they've been running around screaming, well, you know, not only is evolution a theory, so is global warming, and you know how it is with theories. You can't believe a damn theory. Theories are just that. Theories are theories. Theories aren't reality. There's nothing real about a theory. Never mind that every scientific law that's ever been put forward has started out as a theory. It's, you know, only a bill on Capitol Hill. You know, how a bill becomes a law. How, you know, well, you know, there, before a law, it's a bill. And in science, before it's a law, it's a theory. And that being the case, this is disturbing. You know, I'm a child of the space age. Technically, I suppose I'm the just absolute last tail end of the baby boom. You know, the folks from, you know, 1944, 45, 46, that's the front end of the baby boom. But I'm the tail end of the baby boom. I'm the part of the baby boom that won't, that, you know, if the Republicans get their way, won't get any Social Security. From the Boston Globe. NASA is canceling or delaying a number of satellites. No, they're not delaying the satellites that, like, have death rays on them and you know, zap, you know, whack-a-mole, zap, you know, zapping era. No. No, no. NASA is canceling or delaying a number of satellites designed to give scientists critical information on the Earth's changing climate and environment. Oh, really? Damn, wonder why. NASA, which projects its budget 5 years out, intends to cut the overall science budget about $3.1 billion below program projections over that time. Huh? Yeah. Let's see. In 2004, the overall science budget was projected to grow from about $5.5 billion to about $7 billion in 2008. The new projections provide for $5.38 billion in 2008. And less than the cost of inflation after that, according to a report issued last month by the Space Studies Board. Now, just feel free to gnaw on that for as long as you feel necessary. The agency has already shelved a $200 million satellite mission. And at this point, I know that we're talking about these goofy numbers. $200 million, balls roll back in your head after a while. But $200 million is a drop in the bucket compared to, say, well, you know, look at what it probably cost to drop two 500-pound bombs, maybe, on Zarqawi or his cousin, or, from the looks of the photographs, a Macy's dummy with a beard glued on. NASA has already shelved a $200 million satellite mission headed by a Massachusetts Institute of Technology professor that was designed to measure soil moisture. Now, why would you want to measure soil moisture? Well, that's a key factor in helping scientists understand, oh no, global warming, and predict droughts and floods. The Deep Space Climate Observatory would look for things like solar radiation, ozone, clouds, water vapor, and it would do it better than any other satellite that exists. It's canceled, too. Oh, but by God, we're going to have us a virtual fence to stop us some Mexicans. But baby, we're not going to pay for it with virtual money. Nope. We're going to pay for it with the real stuff. And people like, you know, Lockheed Martin, Marietta, Boeing, Grumman, Teledyne, Waterpik are all going to bid on the virtual fence while we don't send up a satellite that can predict droughts and floods or observe and measure solar radiation, ozone, clouds, and water vapor. And in 2007, NASA is going to say, nah, didn't really need to, about a global precipitation measuring mission. And, well, you know, if you live in the Deep South or out into the Midwest where knowing about things like tornadoes matter, you'll be pleased to know that thanks to things like the virtual fence and the war in Iraq, and, well, not to mention the fact that, you know, we're just better off not knowing this stuff as long as we're going to keep our head in the sand and ignore the fact that we're cooking the planet! We're going to ditch a satellite that will increase both the timeliness and the accuracy of severe weather forecasts. Floods, hurricanes, tornadoes, frogs and locusts. Don't need it. Nah. Timeliness? You know, timeliness means the difference between, oh, 2.5 minutes warning and 20 minutes warning and an hour's warning. You know, time to get Toto and Dorothy down into the shelter. How much more offensive, how much more anti-knowledge, how much more anti-American can these rotten monsters get? Barry N. Moore III is director of the Institute for the Study of Earth, Oceans, and Space at the University of New Hampshire. And he said, today, when the need for information about the planet is more important than ever, this process of building understanding through increasingly powerful observations is at risk of collapse. Duh! Professor Moore, you live in New Hampshire. Why don't you ask some of your Republican representatives, like Judd Gregg. Isn't that his name? Senator Judd Gregg? Greg Judd? You know, whatever. Why don't you ask John Sununu about why this stuff is being cut? Ask one of these godless, soulless Republicans why it is that we have to scream support the troops every time we need a multi-billion dollar boondoggle to help kill a few more brown people. But we can't do real science in America anymore. NASA has canceled, scaled back, or delayed all. That's all of the Earth observing missions. That's Professor Barry N. Moore III again. Hear it again. I find that boring. NASA has canceled, scaled back, or delayed all of the planned Earth observing missions. You know, we used to think, back when we were all naive, we used to think that Dick Cheney's secret energy task force meetings were largely concerned with nothing more complicated than divvying up the oil in Iraq. But we were naive. Oh, we were so naive. Because there were little whispers lovingly spoken into willing and accepting ears. We've got to get rid of all the global warming science. Mr. Vice President, there are satellites that may go up and actually prove that it's real. Mr. Vice President, you know global warming is real. I know global warming is real. We know global warming is real. But we also know that if we start doing something about it, we're not going to be as rich as we might otherwise be when we finally die. No, it wasn't just about divvying up Iraq. It was about killing science. I've got friends who are actually Republicans who are scientists. I've got listeners to this program who aren't Republicans, who are progressives, who are liberals, who are sane men and women, who are scientists. And the one thing, whether you realize it or not, the one thing that you all have in common is that this kind of crap drives you crazy. Now I realize, yeah, I'm a Star Trek fan. Yes, I've watched the Star Wars. And I didn't camp out for tickets. I've never gone to anything in a Chewbacca suit, okay? But I do look at the heavens at night, and I look to the stars, and I think that maybe, just maybe, if we can keep from killing ourselves, that we might reach out there sometime. And that maybe, just maybe, we'll find somebody out there that goes, oh, yeah, you've been through, we went through, and doesn't want to eat us. NASA has canceled, scaled back, or delayed all of the planned Earth-observing missions. Do you want to scream? I do. The first bank that I ever saved my pennies in was a hollow little plastic Gemini bank that had imprinted on the bottom all the, sort of like the back of a baseball card, all the relevant data from John Glenn's and Alan Shepard's missions. My grandmother pieced me a quilt that we have to this day. It's a little the worse for wear. I wish it wasn't. It was the West Virginia Centennial quilt, and it was backed with a sheet for a little boy's bedroom that showed astronauts and all the planets. I was raised with this stuff. I grew up down here. I started going to the Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville, Alabama, when I was maybe 5 years old. And that's where the scientists stood in their white coats and told us about the future we could expect to see in our lifetimes. And they rolled the televisions on metal carts with those hard black rubber casters on the bottom that went wiggity, 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 wiggity when they were coming down the hall, and hooked it up to primitive cable in our classrooms when the space launches took place. And we heard songs like, "This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius." And David Bowie sang about Major Tom. And today, the 9th day of June, 2006, I read, NASA has canceled, scaled back, or delayed all of the planned Earth-observing missions. Screw looking for other planets. Screw flying to the stars. We can't even look at our own planet. And why? Because some dude that eats caviar with a little silver spoon and actually thinks that there's a difference between the tastes of two different vodkas needs a tax break. I'm pissed. I hate that story. Let me go to the phones. I want to make sure everybody gets their gets their chance. Let's go to Gerard calling from Indiana.
Hello, Gerard.
Oh hey, Bob. Okay, I had it backwards. Hey, how you doing? Good to talk to you.
Oh, goodness. It's a strange, strange world we live in, Master Bob. Is it not?
I don't know if it's just strange or mean, Bob. It's mean, ignorant, and ugly. It's a tough combination.
But we're back in the day again, Bob.
You don't understand. Most people haven't.
You mean the heretic burning day? Yeah, we are.
Oh no, we're back in the day. We're back in the 60s, and you don't even know you're there. Whoop, click, click. Hey, am I being bugged, or are they bugging you? Hello, Bob.
No, I'm right here.
Oh, I heard a click, click, and I thought, oh, goodness gracious, it must be Agent Fred checking out my location or yours.
Yeah.
That.
Well, I believe that now. I believe it. I hope they're entertained.
Hey, it is nothing to not believe, because if you believe what is told to you, then you're just a believer. If you believe something else, and there's that word again, believe, then you must be a non-believer. See, that's the strangest part about it. If you do not accept what I say or what I perceive to be the truth, then therefore you must be a non-believer. Now we're back, 1,500 years or 15,000 years ago. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's
I do.
That simple. If you do not accept what I say to you, if you only accept what you believe, well, that's fine. You can believe anything. You can believe that God made little green apples and, rain don't fall on Indianapolis. You can believe anything, Bob, as long as you believe it. But when you stop believing and you start looking for the truth, just the truth, don't believe anything that I ever tell you. Look for facts. Something that you can put your hand on and say, okay, oh wow, that's a Budweiser. Tastes good when it's good and cold and the day is hot. Or maybe a piece of watermelon, or you know, like they used to tell them rednecks, all them black boys, they just jumped over your fence, steal your watermelons and your chickens, so they can have some chicken and watermelon. See, that's what they did when they hung them in the trees, like they said. What was that song? Oh, good God.
Yeah, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. See, it's propaganda. It's a lie. It's a twisting of the facts. It's making you believe something that if you had any sense at all. I mean, excuse me, Bob. I hate being shunned. I hate being put off because I don't say the exact words that someone else wants to hear. I really hate that, because if I don't agree with you, that's fine. I mean, I don't agree with you. But if you don't agree with me, it gives you no right to shun me or ban me or make me less than you. See?
Well, everyone here is equal, Bob, and we are equal in our anger. We are equal in our frustration. We are equal in our anguish and our pain, and our stunned amazement, Bob, at what we see going on around us. You know, there was a time in America where Thomas Edison maintained a laboratory and paid scientists just to sit around and think of neat stuff.
Yeah, there was that time.
That America is dead, Bob.
Yes, it is. It's dead. And this America will be dead. This United States of America will be dead if you let it die. It's up to you whether you let it die or not. It's like I heard Andrew from New York the other day, and I thought I should call in. I should say something. And then I thought, no,
because most people won't listen anyway. And then I heard Jim tonight. He said, "Oh, dang, I ain't heard from North Dakota Bob lately." Well, North Dakota Bob just called in. And I'm saying to Jim, you're right and you're wrong. You can't be absolutely perfect, but you're right in your beliefs as long as you keep them to Jim. Okay? And Bob from North Dakota is right in his beliefs as long as Bob from North Dakota keeps them to Bob from North Dakota. And Bob from West Virginia is right in his beliefs as long as Bob believes what he's doing is correct. And Bob from West Virginia is my prince, and I don't give a hoot what Wayne says telling me, stop telling Bob he's the prince, because he told me Bob's getting such a big head he won't even get through the door after a while. Well, I'm going to tell you guys something.
No risk of that, Bob. No risk of that whatsoever.
No, but I'm telling you something, okay? You can believe any dang thing you want to, but know your facts. And, son, I love you for your facts. You never come on the show unless you give some factual evidence.
Reality.
Yeah, some reality to the show. You bring it in. And people come in with their beliefs. That's fine. I love their beliefs. That's wonderful. I'm happy for them. And I believe in the Tooth Fairy and the Easter Bunny and Jesus and Jiminy Christmas and Santa Claus. I believe in all those things. I don't actually. I've never met one. I've never seen one of those things. Have you? Have you met the Easter Bunny? Did it bring you candy and stuff? No, it was your
Bob. The kids may be Bob. The kids may be listening.
Well, that's fine. Don't lie to him anymore. Tell him the truth. I'm bringing you candy because I love you. I'm not bringing you candy, and it's not the Easter Bunny. It's Mom and Dad. And I'll buy you a bunny with ears and stuff, and you can believe anything you want to, but it's Mom and Dad that's bringing it to you.
Well, Agnes, I think Agnes crucified a chocolate Easter Bunny this year. Well, hey, Bob, I've got one more caller. I want to get to before the show ends.
I hope Andy calls in, or Andrew from the UK.
Yeah, I missed Andy this evening. I was kind of looking. Well, I always look forward to his Friday calls. I don't know where he was this evening.
I miss him too. He's a good on boy, and he's got everything going. I'm sorry I took up so much time.
No, you didn't take up too much time. I want to make sure that everybody gets a chance to get in, because that's what it's all about. Bob, thank you so much, and I wish you a very good weekend. And I'll be back at the secure undisposed location this time Monday evening.
I just hate being denied an opportunity to know why I'm being shunned.
Well, you're not being shunned, Bob, but that's something we'll have to take up off air. I've got to roll on, and I've got to get to Gerard. Thanks, Bob.
See you later. Bye.
Bye now. And Gerard, welcome to the program. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, no problem, Bob. I just, you know, got a couple things that got my knickers in a wad today, so I thought, why not? I'll call in. Might as well join the club.
Absolutely.
I was listening this morning. I go to work fairly early in the morning, so the public radio station here plays the broadcast, the BBC, and heard a story on there that it was hard for me to keep the car on the road, but apparently the story was about comes from India, and it's about the neem tree. I don't know, maybe you've heard of this.
Uh-uh.
But the neem tree, I guess, is fairly prevalent in India. It's been used by the indigenous people there for generations and generations, and they use it as an agricultural fungicide. They've got a process by which they make it, you know, appropriate for that application. I guess
sure.
It's a also helps, especially in rice paddies, to in the right amounts to control mosquito growth, which in turn helps control malaria in that part of the world. And apparently the story kind of centered around one woman who has fought a 10-year fight to block the patenting of this process of using parts of the neem tree. There's been a company, a company based in America, but a worldwide agricultural chemical company by the name of W.R. Grace.
Oh, I know them well.
And partnered with, like you like to say, wait for it, the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Who
want to get a patent on this process. And she has fought for 10 years to block it because it's basically kind of on the grounds of, you know, stealing intellectual property from the indigenous peoples there. Because basically what they want to do to the subsistence farmers, the W.R. Grace wants to patent this process and then charge the farmers to use something they've been using for generations.
Well, yeah, and it's happened time and time again and they'll run a real risk of destroying local agriculture, local pest maintenance. But there was a story. This is kind of a little bit off topic, but not really, Gerard.
Well, I thought there was a connection to this whole thing with the internet, and I guess that goes to the heart of why I'm so pissed off. It's like, must everything?
No, I don't mean you're off topic. I mean I'm off topic.
Okay.
No, what I was getting at is one of the things I'm going to miss leaving here and going back home is down here, and I guess the rednecks just hate them, but there are little tienda mexicanas, little Mexican stores, and they sell stuff that you just can't buy at Food Lion.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they sell there is a bean called a mayacoa.
Hello?
Once you've cooked a pot of these, you'll never eat another pinto as long as you live. And a few years ago, now bear in mind that from Peru to the Valley of Mexico, this bean has grown for 5,000 years. It's been cultivated. A few years ago, a guy from Colorado got some of these beans and grew two or three generations of them and went out and patented his bean because he said he had developed a new leaf shape. And now he is trying to enforce it such that anyone who doesn't grow his bean, who grows a yellow bean, is infringing on his patent.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing that's being perpetrated by W.R. Grace in India, from the sounds of things.
Yeah. I just, the thing that just drives me up the wall is, does everything have to be commodified? I mean, like in third world countries, the WTO goes in there, and if they accept, they will invest in infrastructure in their company if they accept their way and their I don't know how to say it, but basically in order. They have to give up their water rights so that the WTO will control their water rights. You know, and this the whole thing of the commodification of water, I mean, that's a subject that we could go on for, you know, all night.
Well, yeah, and some of these things, Gerard, make me actually sort of look back at the people that I used to think were absolutely fruitcake nutty who said, you know, that we're headed for one world government and blah, 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 blah. Some of this kind of smells like that, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, to me it does. I mean, it's when you've got the U.S. Department of Agriculture seeking this patent with a private, supposedly private company, you know, it's like, and you hear the proponents on the, you know, the right wing shows all the time. It's like the free market will take care of everything. You know, your son's an alcoholic. Oh, the free market will take care of that. You know, you got to educate your kids. Oh, the free market will take care of that. You know, you got to have water. You know, we're what, 98.9% of water or something like that?
Yeah, and we turn on the taps in West Virginia and we get free market water and we get a bill for that free market water that would make your hair stand on end.
Yeah, and that's true all over. You know, there's been so many local municipalities that have accepted contracts with these multinational companies for, you know, to provide them what their local municipality used to as far as water service. And a lot of them, especially I know there's a couple in California for sure, that the people have now voted to go back to the municipal, you know, the local municipality taking care of it because this multinational company hiked up the rate astronomically, and the service wasn't as good. And,
no.
You know, and,
well, our service in West Virginia, Gerard, we've got a, you know, our bills are the way they are, not because, you know, the West Virginia American Water Company's out there improving our service every day. It's because they've got to service their stockholders.
Yeah. And I just don't understand it. I mean,
Well, you've got, but also, you know, you mentioned W.R. Grace is a heinous operation. And we could sit here for the rest of the night and connect dots. Do you remember the book and the film about a lawyer named Jan Schlichter called A Civil Action about the poisoning of an entire town in Massachusetts?
Yeah, I vaguely remember that. Yeah.
John Travolta played the lead role in the movie. The company that poisoned that entire town, you know, killing mommies, daddies, grandparents, little kids, that kind of thing. W.R. Grace. W.R. Grace is under indictment in Montana for a little mining town called Libby, Montana. Libby, Montana is sick. The whole town is sick from being poisoned by W.R. Grace. W.R. Grace, incidentally, and I don't mean to take up all your time. You got all the time you want, Jordan. Is also the biggest boondoggle that Dick Cheney ever involved himself in because he thought it would be a brilliant idea a few years back when he was still private citizen Dick Cheney and heading Halliburton and running illegal oil operations in places like Iraq and Iran. He thought it would be a great, you know, he went out on duck hunting or something and got all liquored up and somebody foisted W.R. Grace off on him. And Halliburton bought W.R. Grace. And it is the most pernicious liability because they're getting sued all over the world and they're gonna, you know, they're losing. But yeah, everything comes home to these crooks in the White House, and now they're just going to rip off some people on the Indian subcontinent. Well, that's just beautiful.
Well, apparently this woman has been successful. I mean, of course, there's probably going to be an appeal, but for now the patent has been blocked. You know, I guess I took a mental note too is, you know, the BBC sometimes, that's why I like the BBC because you sometimes get a different angle and they're willing to report stuff like that about the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And you would probably never hear that on mainstream media in the U.S.
Oh, no, none of this. I mean, where was, you know, where was CNN's coverage of the fact that we're just giving up on science at NASA? Oh, gosh, I'm sorry. That was eaten up with 2.5 hours, solid hours of coverage about Abu Musab Zarqawi's head.
Yeah, or Shiloh, Angelina Jolie's baby.
Oh, brother.
But,
you know,
well, that
you're absolutely right.
That kind of leads me to my other thing that I'm pissed off
sure.
about. It kind of has to do, I don't understand, what is this whole Ann Coulter thing anyway? What, I try to ignore her. I picked up one of her books one day years ago in a bookstore and started to read, and after about two paragraphs, I thought, well, this woman doesn't, I didn't see much substance. She just seemed to be about, all she knew how to be was snotty. What, I don't understand, you know, I just caught the thing with Matt Lauer where she's talking about the 9/11 widows. Were they like on a campaign commercial for Hillary Clinton or something?
Coulter has attacked the so-called Jersey girls. Flush Flembaugh has called them everything short of human. And the same thing's been done by the Savage Wiener, you know, the entire right-wing filth machine. Because they dared to come out and question the official account of 9/11 and question the administration's response leading up to it and afterwards. And they were swift-boated. They got the same treatment that Max Cleland did, that John Kerry did, that Tom Daschle did, bless his meek little heart. They just got buried in filth. They got the Karl Rove treatment.
Well, the thing about it that got me is, I mean, like I say, to me, at her worst, she's hateful. At her least threatening, she's just snotty. But it just seems her logic. You know, her question was, why should these people, because they've lost their spouses, why do they feel they can interject themselves into a national debate about 9/11? Well, excuse me. But
well, that's like asking why a sailor who was aboard the Arizona has any business talking about Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, you know, it's like saying, you know, back when, you know, in 94 when the Republicans had their big revolution, and one of the things was, you know, spewing off about the EPA, because there was some farmer out there who happened to have a particularly low spot in his cornfield, and it rained really hard one year, and suddenly the EPA came along and turned that low spot in his cornfield into a wetland, and so he can't plant corn there anymore. You know, and so if I was that farmer, I would, you know, wouldn't he have the right then to inject himself into the national debate? I mean,
sure.
You know, he's the one affected. I mean, it just made no sense.
No, but it, well, it doesn't make any sense. That's the thing.
No,
you're trying.
There's no logic. I mean, there's not even.
No,
logic,
you're
you know?
and Gerard, you're applying rational, reasonable intellect to something that is about as unintellectual as anything you can conceive. Because you see, the way it works in Wingnut world, only they are allowed to have an opinion. You know, if it's their opinion that Hillary killed Vince Foster with the candlestick in the music room, that's fine. But if we bring forward facts that suggest that, oh, the war's illegal, immoral, you know, we're poisoning the planet, nah, we're moon bats.
Yeah. I just don't. You know, and I guess I was listening the other night, and I think you mentioned, too, I think that's a legitimate thing to contact, you know, CBS or whoever, whichever the outlet is, about it, and say, you know, why did you waste 8 minutes on this woman? You know, and, you know, I would, you know, or write their sponsor, you know, say, hey, you know, I'm not going to watch the Today Show anymore because you've got that idiot on there. I've got better things to do with my day. But,
well, the only thing I can suggest is that they bring her on, Gerard, because she generates buzz.
Yeah.
And you can always count on her to come on and say something hateful that will let you find, that will energize the listeners. You know, there's an outrage industry in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud not to be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, anything, you know, come on and say anything on live TV. And you know, as long as it makes them say something,
yeah,
then you know you're getting to them. It's a very cynical way to approach broadcasting, and it is the industry norm.
Well, and it's done under the guise of, hey, we're, you know, and that's the thing that gets me the most, especially people like O'Reilly, the parental attitude. It's like, you know, they're always talking about the liberal elites in Hollywood who seem to want to pontificate about the morals or how what morals we should have. But
I know.
They do the exact same thing. And it's like, what was the name of O'Reilly's book? Something like, you know, who's going to watch out for you?
Well, yeah.
You know, excuse me, but I, you know, I've been out of my parents' house for a good 30 or 40 years now. And
doing fairly, you know, yeah, you're keeping the lights on and food on the table. And
Yeah, you know, the cobwebs are starting to gather up in the cranium, but, you know, I can pretty much still watch out for myself, you know. And I just hate this parental attitude they take that, you know, hey, you know.
And they're the ones who complain about the nanny state.
Yeah. Yeah.
When they're the ones who want to be the nanny.
Yeah.
It's revolting. Gerard, I've got to roll on. I meant to knock off at 9, but I guess I didn't after all. It's so good talking to you. Have yourself a great weekend.
Yeah, you too, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye now. And rolling onward and onward and outward across the pond, speak of the devil.
Hey, man, how's it going?
Our good friend Andy from Wales. Hey, Andy, how you doing?
I'm all right, man. How are you?
I'm okay.
Good. No, I had to look after the better half. He was a little bit the worse for wear tonight.
Oh, sorry to hear it.
Well, it was totally self-inflicted. So.
Okay, well, I think I get it.
Yeah, not too much sympathy involved there, really. But no, onto the subject of debate. Oh dear, water. Do you know we've got a hose pipe ban here? The wettest country in Europe. We're not allowed to use hoses. Car washes are being shut down across the whole country. The works.
Really?
Fantastic, isn't it? It's particularly bad in London where yeast is just heavy, but it's also kind of dry in that area anyway. But, of course, the problem isn't that people are using too much water. The problem isn't that not enough water's fallen. The problem is that Thames Valley's water releases as much water as 3 million homes use every day into the ground through leaks.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't that bad when it was a national industry, but they privatized it a while back.
Well, see, I thought we were going to get to that part.
Oh, yeah. Well, John Major of the Carlyle Group, our ex-Prime Minister, he was, I think, the one that was finally responsible for the water. We've basically suffered since. I mean, we don't have a national grid of water in Britain, even though it'd be relatively easy to do. So even though there's bucket loads of water in Wales and Scotland and north of England, there's virtually nothing in southeast England where London is, because we can't ship it down there. Do you know what they're doing? They're putting it in tankers and driving it down.
Oh, well, that's economical.
Oh, yeah. Well, how much can you fit in a tanker? A few hundred thousand litres, gallons, if that?
Sure, yeah.
That's
not a drop in the bucket.
No, that's like a week for, you know, a small estate or something, if that. You know, and that would be like emergency water, not, you know, use what you like amount. It's absolutely pathetic, and the situation in America and everywhere else where it's been privatized is the same. It's not about supplying you with water. It's about creaming off profits. It doesn't matter what the industry is. If the globalists get their fingers into it, no, talons, they're not human.
The thing is, what we're not limiting making unavailable by virtue of inept private enterprise, Andy, we're poisoning.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, Britain spent, I don't know, the last 25 years cleaning up our coastline from the pollution that we used to just dump into the sea that, you know, we still have polluting industries, but we're a bit careful with what we do with it now. We've finally got to the stage where our beaches are clean enough to be, you know, you can swim off them and stuff again. Do you know what I mean? It's in the last sort of 5 years you can actually go in the coast, in the water around Britain. Not that you'd want if it's freezing. But we've done all of that, and we've spent somewhere in the region of £100 billion over 25 years or 30 years cleaning it all up. And that's all done, you know, absolutely no good whatsoever, because we're tucking so many nitrates into the river systems and so many estrogen compounds and things into the sewer systems that we're killing all the fish and mammals and stuff around our coast. It's not pollution anymore. It's, well, natural pollution, because it's estrogen and nitrogen, not considered pollution.
Well, that's, yeah, you got clarified is what happened.
Mm.
That's a clear, I mean, over here, Andy, that is deemed a clarification. The same thing happened in West Virginia and Appalachia in general.
Oh,
with,
no, we're removing mountaintops. We're reshaping them or something.
Mm. Right, right. Well, yeah, what was once considered stream pollution, i.e. taking the top of a mountain and burying a stream under it and forever destroying it, well, that got clarified into, well, that's not really pollution.
No, it's natural restructuring or something, you know.
Contouring.
Yeah, pick an innocuous phrase out of the dictionary that kind of, the words in some way relate to the fact that you've destroyed nature and you make it sound nice and sanitized. I mean, Frank Luntz, you know, I've said it before, I'm going to keep bringing his name up because the guy's a pig. If I see him in the street, my girlfriend already knows that she will literally have to jump on my head because I'll kill him. I will kill him. He has done so much to destroy our earth that it's unreal. And the only thing that would stop me killing him is if I could actually get a good look at his eyes first, because I suspect he knows and he's regretting it all very much. But everything I've seen recently, he looks very much like the Emperor in Star Wars, you know, with the real death around the eyes and all that.
Yeah, the blood-rimmed eyes. And,
that's
yeah.
It. That's it, exactly. I couldn't think of what to say. But yeah, you know, people like him, these filthy little fascists that think that playing with words is clever, you know? Playing with words is clever if you're being, say, I don't know, Byron or Shelley, and you're doing it over, I don't know, trying to seduce a woman. Maybe that's clever, playing with words. When you're talking about destroying people's method of survival, I mean, you know, look at it this way. I always look at it the worst-case scenario way. Supposing I'm in charge of America. Now, I know that the economy could collapse and we'll run out of power and it could all go horribly wrong. It could happen because of world events, things out of our control. If that happens,
sure,
we're going to need clean water. So we should be making sure that all the streams that run down from our mountains are as clean as possible, just in case. But instead, you filled them all in.
And, yeah, they're filled in.
Yeah,
they're gone. They're not coming back. It's not like they laid pipeline down there or conduit or anything like that for it to flow. No.
No, and you know, the streams that will be forming that run down the top will be polluted with the dust of the coal and tars and things like that that will have been left.
Oh, heavy metals, sure.
Heavy metals.
Manganese, magnesium, zinc, mercury. No, sure.
Yeah,
and it's the little streams. If you, for instance, if you were to fire up Google Earth and go and start having sort of a close up look at West Virginia,
yeah, I've done it.
Or the Appalachians, you know, you notice these little, we call them hollers,
yeah,
little crinkles in the mountains, and I guess it's the same the world over.
Mm.
But every little crinkle, Andy, has a stream in it.
Yeah,
and one Earth scientist with whom I'm familiar refers to those as the capillaries.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's exactly what.
Of the circulatory system that is the, because all those little streams, well, for instance, our local area, they flow into the Coal River. The coal flows into the Kanawha. The Kanawha flows into the Ohio into the Mississippi, and there you are.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, when those capillaries get cut,
you start messing with nature, big style. And
yeah, well, you ever known anybody with bad circulation?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Things drop off and they get cold very easily.
And yeah, you get necrosis and the flesh around the bad circulation dies.
Everything dies.
And you know, the land around the little streams is the flesh, and it does die.
Yeah, yeah. And all the animals that live in the area are dead too.
Yeah.
But it's all in the name of profit. That's what it's all about. Anybody who thinks they don't understand why it's happening, remember, the dudes that are making the money, yeah, cui bono, who profits? The dudes that make the money are not looking out of the window and watching their mountain being destroyed. Okay? You can guarantee that the mountains that these people live around will not be cut down until they've moved. And then they can be destroyed when they're a long way away again. And that's exactly what will happen if we let these people get away with it. This is one of the globalization problems. You know, the guy that's making the money out of those mountains, well, he could well be an American, he's equally likely to be British or Japanese or even Chinese now.
Yeah.
You know? And this insane idea of free market, there is no such thing as a free market. There's never been such a thing as a free market. And the reason nobody's ever tried this, and the reason that Adam Smith didn't talk about a free market, I would like to point out to anybody who thinks they know anything about Adam Smith, you should go back and read him.
Yeah.
Because anybody who says he's the father of modern economics knows nothing about economics. He would be the father of modern economics had we stuck to the economic trading policy that, say, worked from 1940 to 1960, which was basically enforced on us by war, which was intense protectionism. And that's the only economic policy that makes people rich around the world, intense protectionism. There's no such thing as a free market that will create wealth everywhere. No, what it'll do is it'll filter all the wealth into the pockets of the top 25 or 30 families in the world. That's all it'll do. That's all the free market is intended to do. It's not a free market. It's
well, I mean, yeah, that's why that Dubai company is purchasing the second largest private home builder in the United States.
Mm, mm. Absolutely. Well, you know that, you know, Bush family are connected as tightly as you can get to the Dubai family. You know, the family that rules Dubai is one of those families that effectively controls the world. And when I say they control the world, it's not conspiracy theory in the all silver foil hat style sense. They don't manipulate your life individually, and they don't think to control your life individually. Anybody?
Yeah, and they're not Masons, and they're not members of the Illuminati or anything like that.
There's none of that.
They're just greedy people.
Yeah, that's it. All they do is they continually manipulate things to their advantage, and that's all you need to do. If they do that, then the people below them do that too, because they want to become the people above them. Not that that's going to happen, but it might do. And then the people below them do it, and the people below them do it, and eventually you end up with the consumer class, who are told that they're good little consumers because they've got huge amounts of personal debt. And these people are literally the divorced from reality people. You know, the people that go shopping and think a great big SUV is a good investment, and you know that sort of crowd. If you go to the shops and just buy stuff for the sake of it, you are effectively doing what they want you to do. That's what they want you to do. They want you to shut up, don't think, go to the shops. Come home, watch Gladiators. Do you know what I mean?
And especially, you know, we started out talking about water, Andy.
Mm.
But it's the things that water touches. Silly example. I bought a can of turnip greens.
Right.
And you know what turnip greens are, right?
Vaguely.
It's the little green leafy top where a turnip's growing underground.
Mm-hmm.
And you wash them and you clean them.
Mm-hmm.
Cook them down and they're delicious. Right. At least I think they are. Especially with a little malt vinegar.
Right.
I bought a can of turnip greens. I mean, we're talking about leaves.
Yeah.
These are leaves in a can. And I read the ingredient label. And I won't open the damn things, Andy, because I think I was, you know, and the way the labeling requirements are in the United States, whatever there's most of in the can has to come first in the ingredient list.
Yes, yeah, same here, yeah.
Water.
Yep.
Salt.
Yep.
Monosodium glutamate.
Mm-hmm.
Soy protein.
Ooh.
And I think I was two or three lines down the list before I got to turnip greens.
Oh, dear. Well,
and you know, you talk about telling people to go to the store and be good little consumers, and you know, I think I take the time to do this kind of stuff, and I'm not saying that I'm anything special.
No. Well, it doesn't take a great deal of effort to do it, but a lot of people aren't willing.
But
to be
most people won't. Yeah, they don't.
You're not willing. Well, you know, I mean, you see it amongst people in your own families and stuff, and that's possibly the most frustrating, because you think, how can I be related to somebody like that? You know, I mean, my mother, very intelligent woman, she's not too great at education, but she's competent enough to become a qualified nurse, and she knows what she's doing, and she's got good common sense. But she just cannot see what's happening. She votes conservative, and she's always has done. She thought that Thatcher was a good idea. She even thought Major was a good prime minister. She simply will not accept that these people are out to screw us. Do you know what I mean? She can't accept it. And it's so frustrating when you see that. And then when my mum, you know, at least she doesn't go out and just buy rubbish she doesn't need. She's very careful with money. She's very middle class like that. But I can see how with just a very small change in personality, she would be hundreds of thousands of pounds in debt. Because she'd go to the credit, she'd take a credit card, she'd go to the store and she'd just spend and not think. And there are people like this. And, I mean, the worst thing about it is that, you know, even the BBC has TV shows that kind of lionize these people with these huge debts and these insane lifestyles. I mean, what do they call it? They call it bling over here. You know, people who wear lots of ice and things, lots
yeah,
of
diamonds. Yeah, bling.
Yeah, yeah. And it, you know, I mean, these people are just, you know, they're as bad as people who wear fur, okay? Somebody yeah. who wears a whole load of diamonds, it's like somebody wearing a fur coat to me. It drives me insane. Because they don't understand it. Do you know what I mean? I mean, if I'm going to buy some jewellery for my girlfriend, I'm going to buy Welsh or Irish metal with stones that come from, I don't know, Russia or Scandinavia, because at least the miners have a reasonable standard of employment. I'm not going to buy anything that comes from Africa because it's exploitation. But most people can't bother to think about it.
Yeah, it's covered in blood.
I mean, they look at. I mean, the worst thing is that over here you have all this nonsense of black culture is so, so wonderful or something, and you know all the black people need to celebrate their like distinctness in our culture, and to do that they seem to go on about carrying guns and wearing lots of diamonds, and well, forgive me for not being all enthralled with modern English black culture, lots of blood covered diamonds and blood covered guns. Oh, and they talk about money a lot. Wonderful, you know, and it's all part of the same system. Hip-hop music nowadays, not hip-hop so much, gangster music in America and what they call grime over here, is corporate fat white guys in suits with white hair going, oh, how can we exploit the black kids today then? Come up with a new group who are nastier than thou or whatever.
Well, exactly, and I mean, I've been deliberately listening because I've been accused of being an old fuddy-duddy who hasn't heard any new music since, you know, 1989.
Well,
so while I've been down here, I've been deliberately listening to what goes for hot hits programming.
Great.
And most of it just makes me want to scream.
Yeah, no, well, most music that comes out of the corporate system is either inane or offensive, and it's very rare that you actually get something that's nice, do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and you know, everything, it started, as strange as it may sound, Andy, a lot of this started, at least in this country, with country music.
Yeah?
Mainstream country music will not be played
right.
unless it has already been focus grouped to death.
Right, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And that's carried over into pop, top 40.
Well, I mean, I'd just like to, into that sort of mix, you've got to remember that we can't trust these people at all. The music industry, the book industry, any industry that comes out with number ones and lists and stuff like that, it's all fixed. The music industry, literally, they, for example, in Britain, it's probably a similar system in America, but they have 250 like music shops that they buy from. And they work out, the five main companies work out which company is going to be number one for however long. And then they go and buy the records from these shops. And these are the only shops that count. And literally, the shops report people coming in and buying 20 and 30 of the same single and going out. And you know, it's so obviously done, it's unreal. I'm like gobsmacked that they can't even be bothered to hide it anymore. But as for the book industry, if you want a number one bestseller, do you know what you do? Over here, you pay Waterstones £500,000. And suddenly your book is a number one bestseller, and they put it up, when number one bestseller, recommended read, would put it in the Best Buy bit. You pay £500,000.
Well, see, and it's become a lot that way over here as well, Andy, because, Ann Coulter's book is number one at Amazon now.
Yeah, well, I mean, how else could any of like Ann Coulter or Bill Bennett or any of that lot get their books to number one? They couldn't. The only way they get them to number one is because they pay for the slot. They don't sell that many copies.
Well, what they do is they also mass purchase. For instance,
yeah.
The thing's selling for $25 hardcover. I don't know who's stupid enough to do that, but I get email into my box from right wing sites that are offering Ann Coulter's book for $4.99.
Yeah. They just do.
And that's how they're moving it. Because it's important to them to say, see, America is conservative. Millions of people want to read Ann Coulter.
Yeah, right, right. But on the Ann Coulter tip, right, yes, she's making it all up. That's basically what Ann Coulter does. She makes it all up. And the reason why she's attacking the widows of September the 11th is because they're a handy group to target to accuse the liberal media of having this strategy of attacking the government, okay? Now, that is classic projection. There is no liberal media, and there is no liberal media strategy. What there is a Republican media strategy, and that Republican media strategy masks itself by going on about how the liberals keep attacking the president. That's all it is. She's a bought and paid for member of the Bush administration, and anybody who thinks otherwise is nuts.
Yeah,
I mean,
I see it. You know. Frankly, I'm not. Apart from the people who are paid to do it, Andy, I'm not seeing stuff out there from anybody going, you know, poor put upon Ann Coulter. Man, no. She's really got it down. She certainly understands it.
But she's not there. Be nuts. She's literally there to be nuts. She's the lightning rod. So when people say, oh, this is insane, the Bush administration can't do that, you go, well, no, because what Ann Coulter's suggesting is insane. She puts out the most insane topics. She puts out the most insane sort of targets, as it were. And everybody goes, Ann Coulter's nuts. Of course she's nuts. She's paid to be nuts. She's probably like, you know, there's somebody who lived with her for a few years and says everything is just rubbish. It's all crap. And he says that she was all right to live with for a while, but he couldn't cope with her because of the persona she put on in public. Her ex.
It's all shtick.
Yeah, it's all shtick. That was the word. I couldn't remember that one. She is literally, she's just paid by Dick Cheney or George Bush or someone connected to them to be nuts. And of course, in doing so, she's got the opportunity to do things like, well, get paid to write a book by a silly right-wing corporation. You know, I mean, who owns the corporation that published her book? I can bet it's not a Democrat.
No, not at all.
That person is not a liberal, you know?
No.
And that's it. That's all she's there for. She's there to draw fire away from the administration by being the nuttiest thing on TV. You know, the media can spend a couple of days talking about her instead of talking about how insane Bush...
Well, sure, and when she shows up and spews her filth, then, everybody sits back and says, see... George Bush really is a moderate because he's not like her.
Yeah, right. Well, to be honest with you, I think I'm going to have to interview her over the phone because that would be absolutely hilarious because I've got a few things that I think I could put to her to make her just properly sound nuts. And then we can interview the 9/11 widows and then play them back to back and say, which one sounds crazier to you then? Who sounds like they're exploiting the situation for their own gain? You know, and then, you know, after that, all you have to do, anytime someone mentions Ann Coulter, once we've proved it, you can compare the two, once we've proved it, you can just say, Ann Coulter, not credible. And that's it. End of argument. Bye. Do you know what I mean? And then you can phone up CNN, and we can ask them officially, Ann Coulter, why do you keep having her on? She's not credible. Do you know what I mean? With that, that's all we have to do. Once we've destroyed her, we'll just keep on. All we've got to do is keep on at the administration with not credible. Tony Snow says something, not credible. Prove it.
Nope. But you know the other problem with that, Andy, is that as long as there is a Fox News channel,
well, no, because Fox News not credible.
Not credible.
So you know anyone goes, oh, but Fox News not credible. That's all you have to do. That's all we have to get across to the Democratic Party of America and liberals everywhere. Just keep telling the people the truth. The people know that the Republicans are full of crap. You tell them that. Tell them they can just use nice language. Don't stand there and scream at the Republicans in the House. Just stand up and say, I'm sorry, but everything the administration's told us so far has proven to be not credible. How am I supposed to believe them in future? Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and sit down again. You know, that's what we've got to get through to these people.
I think maybe it's because it's all too simple.
Yeah, well, that's it. It is all too simple. A lot of these people play the dance of politics when... There's no such thing. It only exists if both parties want to play it, and all you have to do is cut to the chase. I mean, I want to be a politician because I think I could actually change things, and one of the first things I'd do is I'd call people to their faces liars when they lie. You know, I've had enough of politicians being nice to each other.
Just stop lying.
Yeah, I mean, we've got this rule in the House of Commons that you may not call another MP a liar, even if they've blatantly lied and you have evidence to that fact in your hand. Isn't that insane?
Well, that goes back to the day. I guess that goes back to the day when if you called him a liar, you'd have to go out and fight with swords after.
Well, yeah, but why not?
Right, we're past that. We can, let's do that. Honestly, call a liar a liar, for God's
sake. Bring back the swords. Because, you know, if you're really convinced that you're right, and they're really convinced that they're right, and you can both prove that the other one's lying, go and have a fight over it, and the last one standing gets his way. Fine by me. You know, we've just got to move on from this nonsense of politeness in politics, and we can all just get along. Because all that does is it opens the way for the people who work behind our so-called politicians to do what they do now, which is rape us all. You know, while politicians are being nice, they're wasting time. And they're not doing anything for us. All they're doing is letting corporations get away with what they want to get away with, which is what it always comes back to, which is why I'm slowly going insane. Do you know what I mean?
Which reminds me, we have a problem, and we've talked about it in the context of the United States, Andy, and I do love picking your brain. And the problem we have over here is for shorthand purposes, we refer to it as corporate personhood.
Yeah.
In other words, you know, the Supreme Court extended personal civil rights to corporate entities.
Yeah.
Now, I know that the system is wildly different where you are, but does that idea exist there as well, this corporate personhood? I mean, it's not like you're hurting for corporations there.
No, we're not. Corporate personhood, I think, has pretty much been smacked down by the EU. There were some conservatives in Britain that were kind of interested in that idea because obviously they own corporations or they work for them. But no, I mean, most people simply wouldn't accept it, you know. And over here, our unions are strong enough to sort of stop that sort of business as well. Because, I mean, when you got the unions, the general public and the courts all saying, well, the judges all saying no. I mean,
you talk about corporatocracy that you have to deal with there in the UK. At the end of the day, though, is it American corporations that are the world's problem?
Yeah. Yeah. American corporations are the world's problem. Well, look at the difference. Let's ignore Britain because I want to try and be, impartial here. American corporation GM versus Japanese corporation Toyota. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Toyota come to Europe and they say, we want to build 3 car plants. And Europe says, well, we have 25 states within us that you can build car plants in. And, you know, there's a couple of extra because, like, Scotland and Wales and stuff count as sort of part of Britain. So Toyota say, well, we will build a production center for the car in England because you've got a good car industry and we can just sort of take some of the expertise there. That's good. And we'll build a manufacturing center in Italy and we'll build another manufacturing center in Eastern Europe somewhere and those will do the parts for the production center in Britain. GM will come to Europe and say, whichever country offers us the biggest tax break, we'll build a plant in, but only if you invest in the plant as well. And if it all goes wrong, you have to carry the can. Whereas Toyota, you know, goes, well, it's our plant. It's our risk.
Right.
Do you know what happened when a Toyota plant closed down in Wales 2 years ago? They paid back the loans.
No kidding.
The government loaned 10 or 15 million, and they just paid it back with interest. No questions asked. Sorry, we couldn't make it work. It just wasn't economical. Here's the money. Here's a load of, like, retraining schemes for the employees that need to get a new job.
No hard feelings. Best of luck. Maybe next
time.
Feelings.
Yeah, we'll consider this area for the next factory we're going to start. Bye. GM go, I don't know what they did wrong, but they sold off Rover, and ultimately Rover folded. And the people that were running Rover ran it exactly the same way GM did, which is, like, nobody knows it folds until the day it folds. Because you can't tell me that GM's going to let anyone know that they're going, like, horrendously wrong and they need to restructure. Of course they won't. They'll go bust.
Right. Because, you know, on the bottom line back here at home, it all you know, for a long time, the idea, well, you know, it all cleans out in the tax wash.
Well, not that they pay.
But now GM's going broke. Ford's going broke. They can't afford the health care that it takes for workers to be able to work for them. They're parts manufacturers, if you're following the Delphi story.
That Delphi story has happened over here sort of 3 times in 10 years because of GM. because, you know, GM insists on having segregated supply. I mean, Toyota will build its own parts and sell them, you know, provide them to its cars. GM will insist that another company, therefore they can, you know, slice out some bottom line somewhere, will provide their parts. And that means that as soon as, you know, GM goes to the wall, then, or GM bails out of somewhere because it's going to the wall, then all of the supply industries just fall apart because they have no other options. Because GM will not let them supply other companies, or not to a significant degree anyway.
Yeah, because they're captive. Sure.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, you know, American corporations have got all the rights of a person in America, and that makes them think they can act the same way everyone.
Well, they've got all the rights of a person and none of the morals.
And that, well, they've got none of the responsibilities and none of the morals, and worse than none of the morals, they have a structure that demands an amoral action. That there is no question of moral when it comes down to profit. You're not allowed to let morals come into it. In fact, you will probably lose your job and all of your handshakes if you let morals come into it and don't make quite so much money. But you ride the company straight into the wall, you'll walk away, no responsibilities, you don't lose anything. The only people that lose out are the workers.
Precisely.
Because who
you know, and that says a lot about what the workers have to do. Andy, we've got to roll on. I really do enjoy our conversations.
That's cool, man. It's good to talk. I'll be in touch again soon.
Our best to your better half. Hope she feels better.
I'm sure she will, man.
And a great weekend to you.
Love to the
family. Bye now.
Goodbye.
Thank you. Well, see what happens to my great plans? I can't leave you guys. I got to shut up for 2 days. I can't bail out an hour early. What was I thinking? My brother in arms, as it were, Bruce Birch, is joining us right now. Hey, Bruce, are you there?
I am here. Are you there?
No, I'm here.
You're there.
You're there.
You're here, and I'm. Wait a minute. Okay, this is getting okay.
Heads. Yeah.
It makes
your head hurt.
It's an oxymoron. Bob, I got a.
No, that's Rush Limbaugh.
Should I come back on as Beauregard? Because have you heard from Beauregard this week?
No, Beauregard's been quiet.
Well, maybe he's down there. Maybe he's busy out there protesting the yearly COS convention or something. Who knows?
Yeah, well, that or, you know, passing the jug with Eustace.
Yes, Eustace. What was that one? Who was that? Eustace.
Oh, Eustace T. Cornpone?
Oh, Cornpone. I don't know where those guys get those names. They're pretty cool.
Old Southern families.
Old Southern families. Mint juleps attached.
All the way around.
All the way around. Well, Bob, I know, you know, actually, what I heard you before you came over to me, and I was thinking, you know, Bob's got abandonment issues.
you know, that's just the A issue. I got issues all the way to Z.
I wanted to call you and talk about what's going to be going on next week.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun. You're bolting out of there early Monday morning to get to D.C.?
Actually, I'm going to be leaving where I am and going up Sunday, and just so that I can be there and be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed for the show Monday, but also to, you know, I want to be there and get as many interviews and contacts as possible to try to make our experience up there very enjoyable for our listeners. But the other thing, too, that I wanted to do, actually what I'm going to do Sunday night, is have a recorded version of All Things Reconsidered, which is going to be, ladies and gentlemen, the last All Things Reconsidered ever. So it's going to be a burner. I'm going to take a year's worth of programming and try to clip it into 2 hours. Or maybe we'll make that a 3-hour show. I don't know. We'll have to see. But either way, it's going to be a clipped. It's going to be a best of, rounding out the entire time that All Things was on the air. So I'm kind of sad about that, Bob.
Well, yeah. I mean, but it's the sadness you have. It's the sadness that you have in taking a step away from something and toward another thing. And lest we be too enigmatic, what we're talking about here is a radical growth of the Head On Radio Network. We're talking about, you know, Guy James goes from 3 to 5, and then there's that 2-hour gap between Guy and the start of my show, and you're going to put an end to that gap, Bruce.
Yes, I am.
It's another step toward full scale network round the clock programming.
And I am so happy and proud to be able to carry that slot. I guess, you know, maybe we could call it that. We could call it the 2 hour gap show. What do you think? Probably not.
You know, I think gap's taken.
Oh man! But you know,
the gap show, Old Navy. No, Old Navy's taken.
I tell you though, you know, I think what excites me more than anything about going up there to D.C. is that the premiere show will be actually live from D.C. and that is, I hope, indicative of things to come for this new radio program that'll be on our network. You know me, I love to travel, and so wherever I go, there I go with my microphone.
Right.
So, you know, I wanted to call in and just sort of like just give people a heads up on that. We're going to be live in D.C. Guy James and myself both will be there, so we'll have live content from three, hopefully from 3 until 8 every day there in Washington D.C. and on Monday and Tuesday, and then we'll be racing back to do our programs Wednesday, and then also that'll be, you know, we'll start that'll next week we'll start carrying programming on the network from 3 until 10 o'clock at night. So that's pretty cool. I'm really, really glad to see this happen.
Yeah, and there's more growth around the corner.
More growth is around the corner. Now we just need to light a fire under somebody's butt that we both know. And I wonder if he's listening.
Well,
there he is.
A couple of people's hindquarters.
A couple of beeples. But anyway, but Bob, you do a great job. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Thank you very much, Bruce. You know, I was going to bug out, but you know, I can't quit work early.
I know.
I'm looking forward to Monday very, very much. And you know, frankly, the only thing I would say is, just because we don't necessarily agree with them doesn't mean we don't want to talk to them, right?
That's right. Absolutely.
There may be some people there that that like to call themselves moderates or libermaniacs or you know, and shucks, let's introduce them to the horn too.
Well, our plan is to get up there and to try to let as many people know as possible about this. And to that end, one of the things that I'm going to be doing is taking a boatload of progressive bumper stickers to give away for free.
Great. Gotta have something to give away. Maybe a little bucket of a little bucket of Jolly Ranchers while you're at it.
There you go. All right, well, thank you, sir. I hope you have a wonderful
day. Yes, indeed, and travel safely.
Now,
safely, above all.
I absolutely will. Now, we will be live Saturday night, but Sunday night for All Things Reconsidered, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to be the last one, and it's going to be an interesting show. I'm going to paste together a bunch of clips, and it should be an interesting one. So hope you do join us for that. And
I'll probably be ensconced in the studio by that time, so I'll get to listen to it if I'm not completely just wiped out.
Right on. Okay, man.
And I mean, I mean, wiped out by the driving.
Well, I hear you. I will probably be actually still on the road. I'm going to be recording a lecture in Greensboro Sunday afternoon for the Fourth Estate Radio, and then at 6 o'clock I'm going to start driving to D.C. Now it usually takes me about 4 hours, 4.5 hours.
Yes. But you got some adrenaline going for you this time through.
Oh yes. Oh, yeah. So, you know, if I don't get a ticket, we should be good to go.
The horn can't afford tickets. Obey the speed limit and all driving regulations. If you happen to pass through Maryland, do remember their state motto, please drive gently.
Please drive gently. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Bob. Have a wonderful evening.
All right, Bruce. Take care and have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, man.
Our good friend Bruce Birch will be live with his cohort, John Fox, tomorrow at 10 o'clock Eastern Time for Fourth Estate Radio, preceded by our good friend Joe Vecchio at 8 p.m. Eastern Time again for Cup of Joe. Tune in then. Me, you won't hear from until Monday, and that'll be Monday at 8 Eastern because Bruce, in kicking all this up off, will be going from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Monday and Tuesday. Okay, we all square on that. Coming up after Head On, Old Time Radio. You'll get a kick out of it. Maybe it's decompress from politics and offensive Republican policies, and listen to what radio used to be when it wasn't just deluged with right wing filth. Listen to some creativity. And of course, the show tonight was produced by my lovely wife Agnes. Announced by Brian Reznor. Our chief engineer is John Fox down under in Sydney, Australia. Our IT professional is Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers in Tallahassee, Florida. Ben Birch, of course, maintains the stream and the archives of this and every other show on the Head On Radio Network at whiterosesociety.org. There is a fundraiser going on. And he's not raising money for the new yacht, okay? We're talking about keeping the lights on, so... please, if you can forego a trip to the movies this weekend, send that to Ben and feel good about standing up for freedom and free speech in the United States of America, or what's left of it. The show is always brought to you, as is every show on the Head On Radio Network, by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream, and by supporting the rise and growth of this fine, fine enterprise of which we are so proud. They are helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.